You're listening to a talk by Chris and Louise Friesen, recorded on Sunday, August 12, 2007, at the Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Amazing, versatile, and talented group of performers. We thank you very much for having been with us this morning, and we will hear another number at the benediction. So, Chris, are both you and Louise coming up, or just you?
Both of us, yeah.
Okay, would you come up then?
Sure.
I think we should start off by you sort of telling us what you've been, where you've been and what you've been doing since you sort of left us.
Sure. Who's going to go first? I'll start off. We'll kind of go in chapters just so we don't talk for too long. Going back, we were part of this church as students. It's both staying in the center. We met here. And that's sort of the basis for getting married as well. I'm sure that story has been repeated a number of times.
We know all about it. Not everybody, though.
And
this congregation was involved in
a wedding.
So, thanks again. Still remember that. And then we were living in East Vancouver, and during a snowstorm, decided to go to a local church and found a really vibrant congregation there, Granby Baptist, which was getting connected with their neighborhood. So we attended there for the next 3 or 4 years. Fairly involved with that church.
That's where you're singing.
Yeah, that's where. Yeah. And then from there, I mean, I was finishing up my degree and whatnot, and was going to be teaching. So we went up north from there to Little Buffalo, Alberta, about 500 kilometers north of Edmonton. And I started my first teaching job. We had two little kids. And why don't you start with this chapter of life? And what have we done in Little Buffalo?
I didn't really want to go up north. I had always hoped to be an exotic missionary somewhere, but I didn't want to go up north. But I opened myself up and basically said, "Okay, if that's what if that's what God wants, I'll be happy to go." And it was amazing that when I prayed that prayer and I really felt a total peace about going, and it was probably the best thing we ever did. It changed me in a lot of ways I really needed to change. And we went up with Simone, was 11 days old, and Sabs was 2 years. And there we had our next two children, Balashnia. So that was 4.5 years up there. After 2 years of teaching, Chris, we decided we needed to get into the community more. We were in the middle of the community, but in trailers that had running water and everything that nobody else had. And so we thought we need to really connect with the people more and let them know that we really are here to stay. And so amazing circumstances happened that we moved into the MCC house, and the chief hadn't renewed a thing with MCC, but said, "You guys can move in that house and be the link to the church," as he called it. And so that suited us really well because we didn't want to have a job description. And Chris started to work with some young kids that dropped out of school and did some like weaving of chairs, willow chairs, and carrying water to the people with a pump because they all don't have running water, so they have to have their barrels filled up. And so our cabin too had no plumbing or whatever, but all the things you're always worried about, it's neat when those kind of things just don't matter anymore. One night is still in our new trailer. I was, mulling over, when I'm pregnant, I'm going to have another baby. When we move in there, how am I going to do diapers, how all this stuff, right? And you always lie awake thinking these things. And suddenly these words just came into my head. Life is more than comfort. Life is people. And since that moment, I honestly had no fear of anything. And things were really fun. We got to do animals.
That's amazing. Yeah. You were in a native community then? What tribe was that?
Yeah, this is the political name of the group is the Lubicon. Pretty prominent guess they boycotted something, so they got some 12 months in. But it's Cree-speaking people, and quite a community that had been like had a traditional economy right up to the 70s and the 80s, where 80% of the people were still doing trapping and stuff. And then when the oil boom happened, then that sort of flipped upside down that unemployment thing, because things were disturbed as you'd expect. So today it's a mix of kids carry cell phones around and text messages to each other. It's a poor community, but this is the thing.
It's not like another native community.
No, but it's this bizarre paradox of certain technologies being present there. I mean, we got this call from a good friend the week before we left, asking for help with her phone bill, because they had a $900 phone bill come back for 7,000 text messages. And so she was saying, is this possible that this could even happen? They wondered if it was their daughter. They wondered if they were being taken for a ride by a phone company. And for this is kind of the same. This is the same family that got rear-ended by a gravel truck. The collision of industry and people, and had a terrible time getting their insurance claim. The way that folks up there are treated by, I say us, because we kind of identify more with the dominant culture, is just so sad, it's so hard to struggle with them against sort of the system, as it were. What do you do with this phone company that's charging $900 and has sent it to a collection agency here in Vancouver, and they're threatening them? Or what do you do when a gravel truck runs into you and they won't believe that your back is really sore or not? And of course there are bigger issues than that around land and stuff like that. And also there's responsibility that our friends need to take for themselves and their life. So there's all kinds of intersection of problems. But we have dear friends there, and we part of the reason we're in Edmonton right now, kind of skipping ahead, is so that we could still remain in touch with that community. But I can back up to say how we got to Edmonton.
I'll let you talk about it.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's nice to have someone else just standing here. Are you going to come up again? Okay, well, I can. So we spent 4.5 years in Little Buffalo, and then got this urge to study. I got an urge to study and kind of wondered, is this, are we going to get the chance to process sort of some of the big theological issues that are coming up for us in the community of peers, or is it always going to have to be, alone in the north, scribbling your thoughts, and interacting with our brothers and sisters there, our Christian brothers and sisters there, in a bit of a different way. I mean, we definitely had a connection about that, but I couldn't sort of talk about everything. I was sort of the guy who knew the most about everything, right? I mean, biblically or whatever, it was kind of a novelty to have somebody that could understand and explain the Bible, particularly in sort of the more Pentecostal setting, which is the basic expression of Christianity in the North. Culturally, it connects a lot more than our whole boxed thing. Up north, you go to church in the evening for 3 hours, and anything goes. You take turns talking and singing and leading, and it's very much more culturally appropriate than what we do here for those folks. So that was another challenge in the north, was learning to make a contribution in that setting, even as a square person, a square white person. Anyway, this question about study. So things moved pretty quickly, and we ended up going to Fresno, where the Mennonite Brethren Seminary is. It's a great school if you ever are thinking of studying. And we spent a year and a half there, and then kind of got restless again, because it just felt like we were only studying and we were just, pouring more money, and we thought, we should try to work at the same time as studying. So we started looking around for possibility. I think we applied to the center here to be a residence coordinator, and they said, 4 kids, 900 square feet or whatever it is down there, and that didn't work out. yeah. And we also thought, oh, maybe we could reconnect with Grandview Baptist, which is doing all kinds of neat stuff in East Vancouver. That didn't work out. And then we also thought, you know, maybe we could live in Edmonton and have this kind of a, have this guest house place where people from the north could stay when they came down. Maybe MCC would sponsor it. And so we talked to Abe Vance, and then he made some wry comment about money. And so that was that. But then this a job came up, a ministry, church ministry job came up in Edmonton. And it seemed just like what I might be able to do. It was called Pastor of Lay Ministry at Lendrum MB Church, which is a church somewhat, probably somewhat similar to this one in its demographics and its sort of ethos, Christian ethos. So, yeah, and we ended up in a house that was just quite similar to this vision of the guest house thing, this big old house. So I did that for 4 years, pastoring. And, you know, we got to host friends from the north periodically because the University Hospital Services, Northern Alberta, so I mean, this sort of a regular stream of people, kids with serious problems and young people that have, you know, bumped into things. I mean, friend Henry, that I used to do garbage pickup with once we did this sort of youth work thing, you know. I would drive around with this trailer. We'd pick up people's garbage, bring it to the dump. And Henry was one of my assistants. And so, you know, 2 years ago, Henry was down with a broken jaw. You know, his brother had kicked him in the mouth, and so he had his jaw wired shut. So, you know, he called me. We interact with the hospital staff, came with the bus. And this year at Christmas time, Henry's down with a broken jaw again. This time he was in a truck and hit the dashboard. So again, it's wired shut. And and you know, he gets on the bus and promptly takes out his wire cutters and cuts the elastics. But anyway, this is being in contact with this kind of pain. It's hard. It's hard. It's a different life values, different self-image of these friends, and always calling into question, you know, what's our life, what are we doing, what are our choices. And I remember this moment as a teacher where I had, like, I don't know, banged my knuckles or something, and the student Ryan, who was a guy that had lots of bad things happen to him and was always in trouble in school, and he was like staring at my hand and like, what happened to you? And it was so bizarre for him to see this white teacher with an injury, because to me, or to him, you know, I don't know, it was like you're kind of untouchable, nothing happens to you, you never get hurt, you know, whereas he's got like burns on his arms and his homemade tattoos and all this stuff. So yeah, and so now these kids that we interact with are, they're having kids, and it's great to see them. Some of them are, they're positive people, you know, quite apart from anything. What I mean is that it's good to see them become young adults, and it's nice to see them. They're having kids, and so again, one wonders, you know, what possible further interaction. I really don't know. I don't know about bringing our family there again, or what it's going to be. But that's sort of where we are now. Oh yeah, and I'm not pastoring anymore, because I felt the need to work on sort of a writing project, which I was really never going to get to if I didn't just set aside time. So that started last September, and did that for a year, and then midway through the year, we kind of got surprised by the idea of music and recording. So we recorded a CD last spring, and we just finished it this summer, and so now, you know, we've come to do some concerts and start selling the CD.
I was going to ask Louise whether she wants to tell us a little bit. Is your singing all in your children now, or just Have you been singing?
Yeah, I've been really fortunate to become part of Folk Choral Canada 4 years ago, so I'm a first soprano. So that's been great. And other than that, I teach to support our family.
Yes.
So I teach in the home, piano voice, and whatever else anybody needs to experience.
I was going to move more to your church experience in Blendrum. As you indicated, Blendrum is similar to this congregation, and when we were there in 62, we of course met in a classroom, and then eventually we got an education wing, and you're now in a full, you have been in a full church with the education wing in Blendrum. And we have been going through revisioning. As you notice, we've all gotten quite a bit older.
Not much.
So, you said to me in your email that you had some questions to ask us, so I'm going to encourage you to share your church experience and then ask us the questions that you had in mind.
Okay. Louise, do you want to tell me more stories? Or are you?
Maybe we should introduce the kids.
Yeah. Well, sure. So, Silas, in the orange and brown, was a...
Stand up.
Yeah, sure. He's 13, and he was born here in Vancouver. And Simone, signing the 11, and she was born just before we left Vancouver. And Godwin was born in Little Buffalo, not in our cabin, but he came over to the cabin. He's 9. And Amos was born 2 weeks after we left Little Buffalo on the way to Fresno in Chilliwack, and he is 6. And Junia is 6 months old. She was born in January. Junia is our new vocation baby. So, like, resigned from my job, and a month later, we got pregnant with Junia. So we had to decide, is this the right thing to do? And in a way, she really sort of was a sign to us, ironically, that yes, this is what we should be doing, even though this kind of changes our plans about Louise being the breadwinner. But yeah, that's an interesting story in itself. So church experience. Blendrum was a great place for me to try my wings at pastoring, because they don't put a big mold on a person. They don't call you pastor. Bob and Fran are from our church, so you know they.
And it's their anniversary
today. Oh,
it's 40 for you.
Wow. So from the perspective of a pastor, you know, I had freedom to try all kinds of things at Blendrum. I mean, I was allowed to preach and plan sermon series and do worship stuff, teach a psychology career, Sunday school class, and teach some adult classes. So it's kind of a place where you get to play at ministry in a good sense. You get to try lots of things. So Blendrum was sort of the black sheep church, I guess, in Alberta, the renegade church within the Mennonite Brethren Conference, because it was the first urban church, I believe, and sort of a student-initiated church with this idea of maybe leaving the moral control of the parent community in Coaldale, wanting the freedom to test out lifestyle choices themselves. This is 40, 50 years ago, and to be able to talk through all the hard questions freely, asking the question and all that.
We had some very solid people, Peter and Anne Bark, Peter and Mary Rempel.
And people that, Newdorfs from this church, or formerly of this church, were part of that congregation. We only know that story by legend or whatever. And then we've come along in a different phase of the church's life where my perception is that probably a lot of the younger generation of that group, or the children of that group, don't attend Blendrum right now, not many, for a variety of reasons, going on to other jobs and stuff. And so there's been some other families that have come in. And so, So now there's a bit of a dialogue in the church about who we are and whether that initial vision is still sort of the banner, or whether it's another vision. And so, I mean, you know, there could be conflict between those kind of ideas as well. And I guess I see us right now being kind of a haven for people who still do want to really think about Christianity and grapple with it deeply, who want a more traditional worship expression, not sort of rock and roll on Sunday mornings. And you know, so we appeal to students, quite a fair number of little kids. Anything else we should be saying, Louise, about our church? There's such wonderful, for us, there's just such wonderful people there, such good friends we have, such nurturing people there, and it's a wonderful place for us to be. But we have some struggle ahead of us still, probably, as we figure out, and so this leads up to a question. As we figure out, you know, like, what is our special vocation? Like, what are we called to do? What single thing are we specially called to do as a church, or as a part of the body, as it were, you know, of the larger church? You know, are we an ear at Lendrum, or are we, you know, are we hands at Lendrum, or what are we? Are we a shin, you know, for other people to kick, or what? So that connects with a bigger question. Both personally, both for people and for churches. So maybe this is sort of a question to start. You know, in the story that we've told of our sort of journey, there's been a lot of times where we've asked, like, what are we supposed to do? You know, here we are as people with these experiences, these opportunities, these challenges, and what are we supposed to be doing? Like, what really? You know, there is a God who presumably has involvement in the world and purpose in shaping the way things happen in some delicate way, you know, not controlling them, but allowing things to... So what are we supposed to do? How do we respond to that? What's the good life that we're supposed to be living? So, I'm sure we haven't always got it right, but maybe that accounts for some of our kind of veering around as we try to answer that question. And so I'm always interested in asking people, both as churches and as individuals, okay, like, what are you, who are you, and what do you think you're supposed to be doing? So very personal. And then a little more abstract, like, in our place and time here in the West, the absolute West, like, what are we supposed to be doing? Like, who are Christians supposed to be right now? What is most important for us? And then that would be a question that churches would have to answer too. Like, what should we be right now? Because often we kind of cruise along. We cruise along with what we have been, or what we naturally do. So, trying to formulate a more precise question here. Maybe who do you people see yourselves as in Point Grey Fellowship, and sort of more theoretically, what do you think we should be doing as Christians in this time and place? Like, what's important? What should we be discovering, or what should we be trying? What are your thoughts? So that's my interest in dialoguing with you.